Greet each one in Jesus' name this afternoon. I enjoyed that object lesson very well. It goes along with the subject of parenting, and a couple points will, have some similar thoughts. Now, Brother Ernest, when he called the children front to children's meeting, he said that somewhere along the way, he said all the awake ones to come to the front. And I got this idea that maybe this afternoon for the adults, I should just call the sleeping ones front when it starts to happen. And so I'll let you wonder if that will happen. Parenting with a vision, building in the heat of the day. This is actually the right time of the day to think about the slump of the heat of the day. Because about now, I'm wired to take a nap on a Sunday afternoon. And about the time, the season that we're about to talk about with family, it seems like we need a rest, proper feed up. We thought about the verse this morning, where there is no vision, the people perish. But I also, as I thought about this afternoon's message, you'd be turning with me to Psalm 91. There's some beautiful verses here. Psalm 91, verse 5. I enjoy that so many of the Psalms are about trusting in God and what he does and triumphing and God protecting the righteous. And here, Psalm 91, verse 5, he says, talking about God's protection. Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, nor for the arrow that flieth by day, nor for the pestilence that walketh in darkness, nor for the destruction that wasteth at noonday. See, there's several kinds of destruction. There's a kind of terror in the black of night. That's one kind of terror. And there's another kind of destruction that happens sometimes in the middle of the day. And the destruction that wasteth at noonday. And I thought about this with building in the heat of the day. And so we're going to talk about this thing of being in the middle of raising a family. Now, some of the points this afternoon are going to sound a little like this morning's, or much like this morning's, but developed farther into this middle of life, middle of family, raising a family, the challenges that we face. And so we find in this period of time, we find full schedules. We find demanding needs. We find, yes, a need for school buildings, a practical issue because we have families. Thought about the question, so sitting here before the service, what a faithful family, what is it worth today? Now, Josiah and I, we were talking about some things related to property, and in our area, property prices haven't gone up. And so, talking about, say, selling a house, you can look on Zillow and they put a price, range of what this is probably worth. What does Zillow say a faithful family is worth? I remember my dad, we didn't lock our house. We still don't lock our house. If you need something when we're gone, just come and help yourself. Don't tell your neighbors. But my dad, we never locked our house growing up. My dad would always say, when the family left, the valuables are gone. What is a faithful family worth? And so in the middle of raising a family with these needs, and so, and now the vehicle, we no longer fit in that car. Well, that we had to get rid of a while ago. We got a minivan, and now we don't fit in a minivan, and shame on us. There's a stigma. There's a stigma with a 12-passenger van in some of our settings and among certain friends. And you maybe feel that sting like, that doesn't come from the God of heaven and his word. That comes from influence from the world. But these are the things that the family is growing and there's more children and there's need for vehicle changes. And then, and so as all this stuff is happening, life continues to happen as this growth happens. So you got to do every day as this load grows. And so there's this gradual, can be a wearing out maybe, or maybe a gradual casualness sets in that there's so many things to take care of, and you just tend to the one that's right at hand, and you just don't know how you're going to get the rest of them done. Or maybe those great ideals that you had when you sat there in Bible school as a single person and you thought about the ideals for a great companion and what you would do in raising a family, and maybe you wrote some of the, and suddenly reality of the challenges, and we just start letting go of those things, and those ideals just start waning that, well, we can't do that, we can't do this, we can't do that. So the bar of expectancy is going down, and because the weight is heavy. Or maybe we switch into a survival mode more than into this careful pursuing a vision. We just switch into this thing like, look, we just got to make it today. Maybe discouragement sets in, or feeling overwhelmed, and it begins to steal our energy. The very energy that we need to carry through the heat of the day because it looks so overwhelming. And when we get discouraged and lose sight of what we're doing, we don't even have the energy that we did have. And this is the worst time of the day to lose your energy. I was thinking about that. I'd written that in my notes here, studying a little bit beforehand. And you know, I have this, I'm just old enough to enjoy a 10 or 15 minute cat nap, little snooze. And it gives a shot in the arm to go some more. And I wondered what that is in family life and in this whole, you know. Maybe we'll touch on some possibilities there. But we're talking about a challenging time because the load is heavy, the work is there. And so point number one, sounds like one of this morning's points, but we'll develop it farther. And that is, we must understand that parenting involves time and patience. And it's so this morning we saw that it takes time. We need to spend time with our family. We need time to connect. But this is the idea that no big changes happen fast. Generally not. Now, once in a while, we're working on a subject and it seems like you have a pretty clear breakthrough and something. You cross a hump and it seems like, well, maybe we're mastering that one. But in most times, in this period of time, parents... Sometimes we look around and we say, I just don't know if we're getting it accomplished. Maybe we're correcting. Maybe we're working on an issue and this need pops up again and again. It's like, I just don't know if we're getting anywhere. And what we must understand that faithfulness in that, it takes time and patience. Go with me to James chapter 5, verse 7 on this thought. Because if we don't understand this, we could quickly become discouraged. We live in a push-button society. I want to be able to turn a knob, flip a switch, push a button, and I want to see the results. And much of life, the valuable things in life, you can't flip switches. James 5, verse 7 says, be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Now, he's talking about patience till the Lord comes. Behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth and hath long patience for it until he receive the early and latter rain. Be also patient. Establish your heart, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh. So there, it's the focus on Jesus is coming. Don't get weary. Keep looking forward and keep that hope. But he uses this example, he says, think about the man who's raising fruit. He puts the whole year into it to get the fruit at the end. And that's what you have to do to realize the rapture. Hold on. This will get the good in the end. But I'd like to apply that to this subject with family life. It's much the same way. Think about the fruit trees, the man that grows them, and all the effort that goes into it, and the investment that goes into it, and little at a time. It is a blessing, though, to see the trees begin to bud and the frost not get them. And then, you know, you see that coming. But often you can't see the change from one day to the next. And so sometimes if you could go away for 2 weeks and come back and look at it, you realize, oh, this tree's really changed. But with family life, we're there so much of the time. Maybe sometimes duty calls us away for a period of time. But you understand, we're living there day by day. And so it's harder to see that little change that's happening. And so it takes time and patience. The scripture says line upon line, precept upon precept. It's just a continuing, a working on it, and understanding that no labor is in vain. We can claim the promise that the word of God will not return unto him void, but it will accomplish. And so this line upon line, this teaching and this training in our homes, it won't be wasted. And Proverbs says, train up a child in the way that he is should go. When he's old, he will not depart from it. As I understand it, perhaps we could say, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, it will not depart from him. Sometimes we look at that and we say, wow, it seems like some just throw away the faith. But I want to tell you something. That teaching and that training, until they reach the point of reprobation, there is something like that. And I don't know if I understand that fully, but that's a warning. But until they reach that point, they can't throw it away. That's why some young people are terrors. They walked away from God. They want to tear up church buildings. They want to do whatever, because there's bitterness toward that, because there's something in there. I remember Laban Zimmerman years ago on a street meeting somewhere. He met this individual that got really angry that he gave him a tract, and he got all in his face. And Laban nicely told him that you must know something about the gospel to be all upset. Because it's those people who don't have a clue that just like, oh, what's this? And there's no fire. This man had fire right away. And actually, the man did talk to Laban long enough for Laban to learn that he was an ex-Mennonite boy. That's why the fire was there. And so parenting involves time and patience. And there are differences in children. We talked a little bit about that this morning. Personalities and aptitudes and learning styles. It takes time and patience. And I want to just warn us of a little something. Some of us tend to be more perfectionistic than others. And like everything all like stacked perfectly. And then some just allow it to be any old way. Those are two ditches that we need to avoid. I've seen dysfunctional children that grew up in homes where there was no structure and just about anything goes. And that has a negative effect. But I've also seen dysfunctional children that grew up in perfectionist homes that everything had to be stacked all in just a perfect order. And there was little room to be human. It takes time and patience and working with each other's humanity. It really does. And understanding it. And bringing that humanity to the cross and to the answers that God has. Well, point number two, we need to keep worship alive. We talked about the family altar this morning. Worship together as a family. Pray together. Sing the songs of Zion. Are we too busy in this period of time to do what is important? Can we find time to do it? And there's a variety of ways that we can worship, that we can bless God. It's a wonderful thing to have a family of singers. Not everybody learns to sing. Not everybody can carry a tune. But it's wonderful to sing songs going to church. As a family, it's a wonderful worship experience. And there are ways that we can, especially as a family gets older and you have the four parts, there's things you can do with it. Our family, you know, we often talk about the snares that the cell phone brings with us and brings and all that. Well, you can use some of this technology for beautiful things. Our family, I don't know how many years ago, got onto this habit that on a Saturday night we have song service. And we call my wife's parents. And they listen on speakerphone and we sing for my wife's parents every Saturday night. Those are blessed times of blessing God and blessing the elderly, for example. Worship is important, and what we do with it, and how much effort we put forth. And then as children get older and they accept Jesus Christ, and then their experience and what they bring into the worship in the home. And as we have this range of children, from little children that need those little Bible story books to older children who have named the name of Christ. It's a beautiful thing to have that range and have these little people observing the Christians. I remember in home life when one of our children gave her heart to the Lord, and we told the family, and one of the little ones said, "Now you won't be able to do thus and thus." They knew that being a Christian means no more of that. It's a wonderful thing to be able to have that spectrum, but it's part of the heat of the day when you have little ones and you have big ones. Part of this is church experience. I think it's a shame when dads and moms come to church and bring little people along that didn't bring Sunday school books or Bibles, let alone fill in some answers or learn memory verses. But maybe I shouldn't be so alarmed at it because some dads and moms forget our Sunday school books or don't fill in our questions. I didn't have my questions filled in this morning. I'm sorry. I was struggling hard to get three messages studied for. And so I'll just reveal that to you today. But I love to fill in my Sunday school. I love to actually write something there. The publishers left blank space for it. And they put lines in your children's books. And I'd recommend parents to know what your children are doing. Now, I understand maybe grandpa died Saturday and the and stuff. There might be occasions, but it's not every Sunday that there's an excuse for not having Sunday school lessons done. And so teach our children interest in missions and outreach and going and singing. Youth that love to worship, taking assignments at church. Keep worship alive. We're talking about a period of time when now we have offspring to give back to God in serving and adding in the worship service and taking a place. Because, well, part of this vision was to raise a family for God and to have children to grow up to be like their parents and worship like mom and dad do. And close that generation gap. I preached in quite a few years ago at a church where up front, the front three or four benches were very conservative old people. And then there was slippage going on back through until you got to the back. They were really worldly looking. And I was surprised. I was shocked at the range back through there. And I asked one of the older men afterward if they believed in a revolving carpet. Like, if they have a plan to bring those back benches forward to this level front here. And one of the old men said, "No, it doesn't work that way. It always rolls back. It never rolls forward." Because the expectation was not that children would do as their parents. Probably because, a little like we struggle with, we have a little section about dressing our children in the standards that say should dress them according to the same principles. And I don't know what that means when I look around. I know what that means in English words, but somehow we think there can be a big gap, and we think the carpet rolls forward, and it doesn't. It rolls backward. And so we need to care about and work on that. Point number three for this in the heat of the day, a faithful, steady example goes farther than words. Now we need words. We need teaching. We need fathers and mothers need to be able to put into words our Christian beliefs and convictions and faith. And some are more gifted in doing that than others. That's why it's beautiful to have a church fellowship where another brother might get up, say, at a Wednesday evening topic and explain something that our youth connect to that I couldn't hardly say in my house. Sometimes you brothers can say something that my children will listen to better than they'll listen to it from me. Or they'll come home saying, huh, amazing. He said the same thing you've been saying, Dad. That's part of the blessing of brotherhood. But we must remember that more is caught than taught. Faithful, steady example goes farther than words. We can teach till we're blue in the face all the correct words, but if they see us doing something different, it won't go very far. Go with me to Titus chapter 2. I know this is direction to Titus, a church leader, and I know that, you know, maybe we say, well, you know, that's, I'm just a dad, I'm not Titus. But one of the things that impresses me in Titus 2 is it starts out, Titus is his church leader, and Paul is writing saying, here's some things you need to speak about and teach. And you need to teach the aged men some things, and the aged women, and the young men in verse 6. And then verse 7, he switches, and he talks right to Titus, as I understand it. So you're supposed to be teaching all these age groups, and then he says, Titus, in all things showing thyself a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. And then he goes on, exhort servants, teach them this, teach them that. But in the middle, he said to Titus, example is very important. And part of the reason it's important is tucked in verse 8, that your critic will be ashamed. And I know we're not perfect. And so I know that when a youth that grew up in our settings or in our home walks away from God, they can find enough of material. They can find enough of flat spots to criticize us. But part of this teaching is a faithful example shuts up the critic. He has to say, well, I didn't want to live that faith, but my dad and mom are faithful. And that's something that we need to keep our vision on and keep working on, because we are not perfect, and wherein we stray, we need to correct it and say, I'm sorry. That was a wrong attitude. I want to do what's right. And that's the only way you can be blameless. It doesn't mean you're perfect. It means your faults are taken care of. They're brought under the blood. A faithful, steady example goes farther than words. Faith in God, we talked about this morning. Faith in God. What happens when little people see mom and dad having faith in God? I remember an occasion when I was a little boy. My mom had gone somewhere, and she had gone somewhere to Lancaster County. And it was getting later in the evening, and my dad was concerned. We didn't have cell phones. My dad was concerned she wasn't getting back. And it was getting close to supper time, and mom wasn't getting back. And part of the reason he was concerned, it was raining and sleeting, and it was bad weather had started, and we didn't realize it. And my dad called us children to the living room, and we knelt down and prayed for mom. All we could do was pray. That's all we could do. And we had no idea how mom was making out. Mom made it home that night. But I remember the impression that left. Because we flat had no other options. and we had no way of finding out if Mom was safe. All we could do was commit it to God. I think some of our modern things mess with this challenge of true faith. I mean, you read stories of preachers of the past who trusted God to get them to a certain... Look, I have a credit card in my pocket that I can buy gas. I don't know. I never tried it, but I'd imagine I could perhaps purchase another vehicle if mine left me set and keep going and whatever. Probably end up being an expensive way to do it. But how much do you actually need God to go about our work? We're talking about a faithful example where faith in God, trusting in God, leaves impressions on little hearts that you can't hardly put in words. You can have 7 Sunday school lessons on faith, and when Dad will kneel down on the carpet in the living room with the little children and pray for Mom, something greater happened in that moment. Cheerfulness under the load of duty. Cheerfulness. Mom's happy to be washing all of this wash and cooking meals. Mom's singing, or having a player singing the songs to her, and she's singing along. Obedience to God under test. I had to think about what Paul said about Timothy, that he remembered the unfeigned faith that is in thee, which dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois, and in thy mother Eunice, and am persuaded in thee also. It's a beautiful scripture example of generations of faith. But it wasn't, as I understand it, it wasn't without its brokenness. So who was Timothy's father? Where was he? I guess there'd be some questions on that. But a faithful mother and grandmother made a difference for Timothy, according to Paul's words. A faithful, steady example. There's a little piece of this, and I don't want to overwork this point, but there's something I want to touch on. We should remember the law of sowing and reaping. I get a little concerned. I have no idea if this is here. So I speak free, and if you're doing this, God bless you in finding your way. But there's this kind of family raising children that is this really ultra scheduled thing. And children, you know, they'd only get fed a bottle and this. I don't even have it all figured out, but this really scheduled. You know what I'm talking about. And nothing outside of that schedule. And they need to learn. They'll just lay and cry if it's not the time for that or whatever. And this is what I like to say about it. Perhaps that's okay. Perhaps there's some value in that. I don't want to throw it all out because structure is important. But just remember, the day when you're 80 sitting on a wheelchair in your son's house, and he says, and you say, I'm thirsty, and he says, it's not time for a drink. Remember. Remember. Okay. I believe that the law of sowing and reaping, pays attention to much greater detail than we do, because it's God. I think that I've already reaped some things. I know there's some school students here, but I was naughty in school one day as a boy, and I well remember more than once as a teacher, somebody being naughty in much the same way I was when I was, and thinking it was funny, and I didn't think it was funny the day I was a teacher. And somehow I saw myself in that event, and it's like, you're reaping. God said, listen, you thought that was funny. Now I bring this. And so another area under this faithful, steady example is the area of purity and proper reserve. Little girls turn into young ladies in our homes. The subject of modesty, the subject of appropriate relationships, even dad-daughter relationships, and the change that happens. I'm not going to go into lots of details, but I believe that our society influences us maybe to take too many liberties because we're family. And I don't believe it's appropriate for the family to all go swimming, for example. I don't I believe the Bible call to modesty is modesty 24/7 when there's other people present. I don't think modesty is a ticket you can put away when you go swimming. When you go, I know you're not going to be dressed like you are this morning, but modesty. And the relationship there. Faithful, steady example that there's not a question that something underneath was going on, is going on, that is not good. Number four, another thing to think about in the heat of the day is that discipline and sacrifice are good for us and our children. Discipline and sacrifice. See, one of the things that we are doing as we raise children is there is discipline there for them. They must learn some things. There is a pattern for them. They must get up. But dads and moms, there's disciplines for us as well in this whole thing. Schedules might seem demanding. Think school schedule. But disciplines are good for us and for our children. And as we will accept that discipline, then we are equipped to teach them discipline. And one of the great things that's missing in society is discipline, self-discipline. Maybe we never dreamt that life would deny so much from us. But it's good. It is good for us. It's for a good cause. It's for a worthy thing. You didn't know what to say. A dollar figure for what a faithful family is worth. You weren't going to say $1 million. Okay? Now we're at this thing of sacrifice. It's sacrifice for that thing that's worth so much. So then is it really sacrifice? I'll let you in a little clue. I'm struggling a little bit with tonight's message because reaping the rewards seems a little selfish. Like the rewards for a faithful family. Like we got this. Well, probably it's better to look at the blessing that a family is to us, the community, and all that. We'll tackle that tonight. But discipline is good for us, and sacrifice. Regular habits, normal routines are healthy. The responsibility of faithful leadership, involving children in housework and chores, give them age-appropriate jobs, bite-sized work projects. It's good for them. It's good for parents to work with them and teach them. Sometimes children, when they're small, they get overwhelmed if the room is a mess, the toy room's a mess, and you say, clean it up. Maybe you have to break it down for them and say, you're responsible to get the Legos in that box and put it away. And maybe they can picture that a little better than where do you start with this whole mess. And so age-appropriate kinds of direction that, and then if you ask them to put the Legos away, make sure they put the Legos away and not neglect it. And just waste time. And then in the end you say, well, okay, you know, I wish you would have, but you didn't. And they learn that what you said doesn't matter. And if they waste enough of time, if they go get lost somewhere else, go hide out somewhere when the dishes need to be done. Discipline and sacrifice are good for us. We need to combat the entitlement mentality that says I should get rewarded for everything I do. I remember a story of a home situation where the youngest lad growing up in that home, he would not take a shower unless his dad or mom gave him his $5 allotment to take a shower. There's no boy or girl getting paid $5 in my house to take a shower. See, but somewhere along the way, something got started that this little fellow says, if I'm going to have to do that, I need to get paid for it. And we need to combat that. There's lots of things that we do in life because we're responsible to do them and there's not a dollar bill attached to it. Self-denial of sharing and caring for others and giving to others. Home has so many opportunities to practice this in little ways to get good at it so that when there's a greater need, we have learned that it's more blessed to give than to receive. Try to teach that concept to our worldly neighbors. More blessed to give than to receive. Maybe some of them understand something of that in this philanthropy in our world today of giving, but mostly it's a selfish society. Number five, again, we talked about this morning, but follow Bible direction for correction and growth. Proverbs has many teachings for us on child training. Withhold not correction, Proverbs 23:13. Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod and shalt deliver his soul from hell. Those verses we might cringe at, but it's this concept of correcting our children. Small children. See, then we're talking about the period of time here in middle age where you have small children and you have middle ones and you have adolescents and you have youth. And there's some difference maybe in the way we correct things as they grow up. So there's some change, some growth to happen. But one of the things that I want to think about on this point, and this is especially a challenge in the heat of the day, and that is the subject of consistency. And almost all families, I've heard this numerous places, where children reflect and say, well, so the older children reflect and say, well, the younger ones got by with a lot more than we older ones did. My children will tell you that too. That is kind of common. Consistency. If there's a great gap in what's happening, or if one time it's tight and another time it's loose, or if there's certain seasons of time that we really tighten up on something, or if you get in trouble more for disobeying dad at church than you do at home, that doesn't work. I remember a youth counseling, he told me that in his home, the only time they had family worship was the time leading up to an ordination at church. In other words, we might get asked about this, we better brace up, but we were neglecting it. That doesn't work well with raising faithful families. And I know it's difficult. I know sometimes, I'm going to tell a little story that involves Brother Steve. But it's a good story. One time, as a young minister, I went with him somewhere, and I got in the car, and as we were driving, he said, he said, this morning I got a telephone call and I didn't get much Bible reading done, if any. He said, what did you learn this morning? What inspired you? Do you have any bread to spare? And fortunately, I had read something. I don't remember what I did. I had not neglected it. And I learned something because I thought bishops never would miss a day of reading their Bible. But I learned the concept that, okay, life happens. And sometimes here we are. But then there's ways to say, where's bread? Who else had bread? You can't do that every day. You shouldn't do that every day. You understand? This desire for growth, this example for our children in spiritual growth, consistency, pursuing God, correcting that which is wrong. There's changes that come as children become teens and adults in this whole thing of correction. We talked a little bit about that from what little children, how things are corrected. And then as they get older, giving them some space, giving them some responsibility, giving them. And then as they're faithful with it, giving them more. If they're not faithful, pulling it back, helping them to learn that what they do is important. They're not automatically entitled to that. They must be faithful with it. They are stewards of dad and mom's things, or they are, whether it's simple chores with animals or things like that. And something happens in a child's heart when they begin to realize that, well, dad trusts me. Mom, I can do some things. I'm growing up. Bible direction for correction and growth. Correcting the things that need corrected and then growing and becoming what God wants us to be. Number six, we should frequently consider our priorities. What things are most important to us? What things, you know, one of the things with family life is there are certain things that I as a dad, it's my responsibility to do it and no one else can fill it in. Somebody else could have came and preached here today, right? But there's some things with family life that only I can do. You can't come and fill in on them. And so we have to be faithful with those priorities and not do the glitzy upfront things and neglect the home things that only I can do. It's not glitzy upfront to have to preach. You understand the concept that there are some things that only dad and mom can do. Now, if God calls father from the home or mother from the home, other brothers and sisters can fill in. God gives grace for that, yes, but it's our responsibility. And what is our priorities? I think I said this morning to not always say no to kingdom opportunities. It's not true that all kingdom work stands as competition to home life. There's a lot of kingdom work you can do as a family. But don't say no to kingdom opportunities while running to every social and fun thing. Family's a powerful witness and opportunity in our world. We'll talk about that tonight. But we should frequently think about our priorities. What is important to us? What do we say no to and what do we say yes to? And that will shape our children tremendously. I believe that rest and refreshment are important. I thought about this idea of a 15-minute cat nap. I believe that rest and refreshment are important. And so, in the heat of the day, I believe that there is a right way for father and mother to take a little time together aside from the family for refreshment and connection. But we need to be really careful with it. I'll just unpack this a little bit. I heard a lady once say that she needed to go to this ladies' retreat. She just had to get away from her family and she said it in front of her family, her children. I don't think we should do that. Because it sent the signal that you children wear me out. I just got to go to this retreat. Parents shouldn't do that. Oh, you children, your family's so difficult, we got to get away. I believe there's a place to get away and have some time. But we should not cast reflection. We should enjoy the work that our children bring. And be really, really careful about that. That it takes lots of time because this is so wearisome. I'm concerned about this on the church level. I know sometimes we get these invitations to go to a minister's retreat or whatever. Come away from your flocks and I understand there's place for that. But like I said this morning, is there not refreshment right here in the congregation? Is there not brotherhood? Is there not inspiration? What are we missing that we got to get away from this that God intended to get? And where is the refreshment as a whole family together? And so many of these things, there's like a ditch on either side. And there's a place for a little, can be overdone, can be maybe done in a wrong way. But rest and refreshment are important, that we do not get weary. You think about a builder, for example, in the heat of the day, building. You know, you got to think about drinking sufficiently and you need to think about, what am I doing? If you just plunge forward and don't think about the load, the taxation that is on you, you can pay a high price for that. And so a carefulness to think through. What are our priorities? And make sure we're getting those done. So we're not wearing out on everything else that we don't have the energy left to do what is ours to do. Maybe mothers will need to say no to running to those parties, Tupperware, or I'm being hard on Tupperware. I think I mentioned that one this morning, but you know what I'm talking about? Look, I don't have time for that. My care is here with my children and my family. Last point. No, it's not the last point. Choose to live simply. Number 7. Choose to live more simply. Vacations can wear you out and cause stress. I am sometimes tired or coming home from the cabin than I was going to the cabin. An evening at the house. with a simple wood fire. You don't even need a fancy Traeger grill that costs you $2,000 that you had to finance on a credit card to get it. A simple little wood fire in a fire ring and roast some hot dogs is very simple to do and relaxing and refreshing. And the connection maybe can be greater than if we put all that other on our back and we don't really have time then the rest of the week to enjoy each other because we're running, 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 making a living. Upgrading to a newer house adds financial pressure. I remember when our children were little, I remember teaching summer Bible school at one of the local congregations, and some of the families invited us to come to Dairy Queen afterward. It was tremendous. I mean, it was a blessing to be invited out, and I think they were planning to pay for the Dairy Queen stuff or whatever. But we really struggled going to Dairy Queen with the little children and doing that whole thing out there in public, trying to and whatever. And we said, you know what? Why don't we buy some root beer and some vanilla ice cream and go to our house and have root beer floats, where when a child spills one or whatever, we're at our house, not at Dairy Queen, and the other people are. You can actually have a Dairy Queen experience at your house for half the price or less, without the pressure of trying to do this in public, and then if a child needs correction, well, you can't do it here, because what are you going to do? Choose to live more simply. When our children were little, in our first years of marriage, I was always a plant person. I always enjoyed plants and flowers and garden, and I had the green thumb. And my wife took little interest in flowers, and we didn't have many flowers, and it's okay. I can get along without flowers. And once the children were grown, suddenly my wife has some of the most beautiful flowers in her house. She has Christmas cactus blooming right now and whatever and stuff. But she didn't take time for that when the children were little. So there's seasons of life. There's some things maybe you can't do in this middle that you wish to do, and it's great and wonderful. And maybe it'll come another period of time when you can do that. Learn to live more simply. As a boy, I remember going to church with the newest painted vehicle. We knew it would be the newest, the freshest paint on the donor's church parking lot. My dad had painted our white Rambler station wagon. He had painted it with Rust-Oleum paint with a brush Saturday outside. Painted it. And Sunday morning we went to church, and we knew it would be the freshest paint on the parking lot. But we wanted to park way back in the corner and hide. But it was cheap. A quart of paint covered a station wagon Rambler in those days. And it stuck amazingly well. Nobody paints a car with a brush today. But you could. Number 8, teach our children to work for a living. We talked some about that. Ephesians says, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor working with his hands the thing which is good, for a reason, to have to give to him that needs. A noble cause of giving. Teach our children to work for a living. We talked about teaching them skills this morning, but give them opportunities to develop the discipline of hard work and responsibility we talked about. Think about homework. What are we doing when the children bring homework home? Oh, we can't do this. And I know school should be careful how much they overload home. I understand that. But children need to learn to work for a living. We live in a soft society. Now, here's this side of me maybe coming out, this little negative side as I get older. Because in my day, we brought firewood in. We heated with firewood. We didn't have a furnace. I didn't know what a furnace was until I got married. All we had was a wood stove. We brought firewood in, carrying it in, or in the wintertime, on a sled or on a toboggan or a wheelbarrow. We had no engine to start to bring in firewood. And today, we have Kubotas with loaders on, and all. Even if we do burn firewood, we wouldn't carry it in by hand. But you actually can carry in a year's worth of firewood. You can carry it in a day at a time. That was one of our jobs. We got home from school. We were to fill the wood box with wood. And the wood supply wasn't real, real close. It was way back over the back. And we had to work hard to get it in. And it did something for us. Our generation, growing up, has too many push-button things. They're not learning to work hard. And it shows up in the workplace and on the farm. You got to have a tractor to do it, or it can't be done. It's good for our children to work for someone else for a time, not just working for dad. There's some value in working for another boss. Last point, be sure to keep the heart of each child. Evaluate what's happening in each child's experience. Speak to them about moral issues, development. Some of those things, if needs are arising, if something is going wrong there, it will close the heart of the child toward their parents. For everything else, for other subjects. Walk with them in their personal struggles. Seek to understand life from their perspective. Do you know their friends? Are those friends good friends? What influence is coming into your life, into their life? Don't turn children loose too young. To go away with friends too young. They need parental influence. They don't need cell phones till they have a job or drive and they're away from home. In the meantime, if they need a connection, they can use mom or dad's phone to message one of their friends. So this is something that's happened. I don't know what would have happened to me as an adolescent if I'd have had a phone in my hand. Sometimes when I wanted to do something and my dad denied me of it, if I could have gone to my bedroom upset with my dad saying no, gone to my bedroom and messaged my other friends who were my age struggling with their dads who said no to some things. I don't know what impact that would have had on my heart, but I tremble to think about the negative impact. And so, to keep the heart of our children, we will need to say no sometimes, and they might get a bad attitude, but we're going to need to be able to talk and work through that and even challenge that bad attitude and keep a connection. I said in my winter Bible school message about child training that I don't like the kinds of discipline that distance children from their parents, like I'm going to lock you in your room for the next hour. I don't like that. There's a Bible way to correct the problem in your presence. And oftentimes after a spanking, I would take a child on my knee and I would talk to them and assure them that it's cleared. And I don't like disciplines that are banished, and they should be closer to us. Maybe they should work with us the next hour rather than go to your bedroom for an hour and fume. Keep the heart of each child, because we all are aware of the fact that once you lose the heart of a child, it's very difficult to regain it. I realize that children have their own choice to make, and so sometimes children walk away from us, and we don't know what else we could have done better. And God can still work in their hearts. And so if you have a wayward child, take courage in the work of God in hearts. But may God help us today to build, as we build in the heat of the day, to take courage and rise to the responsibilities. Not be ashamed to stand for truth, teach truth, live it out, sacrifice, work hard, trust God, and follow Him, and He will bless us.